It's a, or the, mashed potato episode. From the basics of homemade to a taste test of homemade and something from a dried packet. This is a how-to for mashers and a personal word to avoid the convenience of packet mashed potatoes. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 212, Food and Freedom Once a Week for Life. Mashed potatoes. Is there much better than amazing mashers? Part of the germ of the idea for this episode was seeing what was in the checkout on a recent grocery store trip. Pork chops, 2 packets of powdered mashed potatoes, a 3-pack of shells and cheese, macaroni and cheese, and maybe some tater tots. But the powdered mashers caught my eye. So I bought a packet and 2 Idaho potatoes. I did a test. Now, before I get to the test, there are about as many ways to make homemade mashers as there are grandmas to make them. The basics are potatoes, usually boiled, then drained and mashed, and add-in is stirred in. Now, even before we get to the stuff added, there's a discussion to be had about how to boil those potatoes and what kinds of potatoes, and can you cook them a different way? Can you steam them, perhaps? Yes, you can. Can you microwave them, perhaps, for mashed potatoes? Absolutely not. For the kind of mashers I prefer, I use Idaho's or baking potatoes. Now, if you are new to the planet and don't really know much about potatoes, or if you really are a potato fan, then Idaho's is it's the state, but they're Bakers, they're russets. They're the large ones, sometimes they're really large, but not sweet potatoes. Very brown on the outside, might have a little bit of texture to them. They can weigh 1 pound or more. So definitely larger in size than most. Then there are, you'll see, red skin potatoes, usually mostly roundish compared to a russet. Sometimes you'll see white potatoes that are small, sort of potato ovally, but definitely smaller. Sometimes a thing called the fingerling potato, the skin. Fingerling potatoes can be new potatoes. A lot of confusing terminology. New potatoes mean just that. They're out of the ground 1 month or less, and the skin will easily come off with a little bit of abrasion from your thumb. Some potatoes are designed to be small, like fingerlings, but they don't necessarily have to be new potatoes. Lots of confusion. I actually did a whole episode on potatoes, but for these purposes, we're looking for those large Bakers, russets, Idaho, Yukon Golds will work, but they're a little bit less starchy. And what we want here is a starchy potato. Those red, sometimes white ones, sometimes light yellow ones are a different kind. There's 2 main kinds, starchy or waxy. Now, waxy doesn't taste like wax. What that means is that if you dice up a waxy potato and put it into a soup, it's going to hold its shape. It's going to stay in that same shape, which has the advantage of prettiness. So as opposed to these starchy potatoes will break down. They won't hold their shape. They will keep the flavor in the soup. But as an aesthetic thing, the waxy are better in soups than the Bakers. The main thing we want for a really spectacular mashed potato is starch. And those Bakers, those russets, they are high in starch. Now, most folks will peel and dice the potato, boil it in salted water, dump out the water, mash or blend that potato, put them through a ricer maybe or a food mill, and add the stuff and season and serve. That was fast. Let's slow down a little bit. Boiling peeled, and cut potatoes will lose some of the starch because the cut potato is in water and the water will draw off the starch. It is a convenience to cook them that way, but with some degree of quality loss. Boiling whole, unpeeled potatoes keeps nearly all the starch in the potato. The challenge is they have to be peeled while they are hot. Yes, it burns. The mashing. Granny might have had one of those old-looking mashing tools that makes the junk drawer get stuck. It might be metal squares on the end of a handle or a bent piece of thick, round metal snaking back and forth. It almost looks like something cowboys would use to brand cattle. That tool is cute, but I find it mostly useless. It's certainly for mashed potatoes. The piece of metal, either round or square with round or square holes, performs better for mashing the cooked potatoes to almost smooth. Those tools will leave some amount of lumps. How many lumps is mostly up to the cook's preference and muscles. One note, the more lumps in the pan means less hot stuff will be absorbed. That makes sense since a lump hasn't allowed the available starch access to the good stuff to be absorbed. I mentioned a tool a minute ago, a ricer. Now, if you don't know what that is, it looks like a giant garlic press. If you don't know what a garlic press is, let me try to explain. A ricer has usually a round, it's going to look like a round holder, a round cup, maybe a cup and a half or 2 cups in size, with many, the whole outside's covered in holes. It's not designed to hold anything, it's designed for things to go through. The device is hinged near the cup side. It has two handles. So you open it up, and in this cup, you're going to put your peeled, or not, but probably want to peel, potatoes into this cup, and then there's a little plunger that you, as you're closing the device, you put the plunger in the hole, in the cup, and then you squeeze with some force, and all the potatoes go out into the bowl or the pan through those holes in that cup. And it looks like grains of rice, which is why they call it a ricer. There are various designs and various cup shapes and sizes, but they all work pretty much the same principle. A different tool, a food mill, is also a useful kitchen tool, very handy for making applesauce. It looks a bit like a sauce pot with a perforated in kitchen means has holes, a bottom with holes in it, and then a handle coming up out of the center of this thing, which turns a plate, a piece of metal that is designed to push the item in the pot, in the food mill, through those holes on the disc on the bottom. The bottom of the thing does come out, so you can change disc hole size to make small holes, medium holes, depending on what your preferences are. It's a good tool, definitely, if you don't have one and make a lot of mashed potatoes or want to make applesauce, it's worth having. Tomato sauce, time for canning. Give it a Google. A food mill is a bit faster than a ricer, and from my experience, produces about the same quality of finished mashed potato. That means that the whole size is similar. Now, storage and cleaning and costs are relevant factors for each, and that depends entirely on your situation at home and your budget. In this house, I am a skins-off guy for mashed potatoes all the time. Now, I have no issue with skins on, especially with smashed Redskins, but I don't make them. All right, so far, we've only cooked and smashed or pureed the cooked potato. Now, I mentioned those whole skin-on potatoes need to be peeled. They don't get, so yes, they do. You need to have some protection on your hand to hold that hot thing because it's just shy of 212 degrees and transfer of heat doesn't take very long for that thing to become too hot to hold. I use a kitchen towel and then a little paring knife, and the skin peels off pretty easily. It does have it's a bit sticky, so it will stick to things like you in the counter, but that's how I peel the potatoes after they're cooked. Peeled and cut potatoes cook a bit more quickly, sometimes a lot more quickly, depending on how much water is in the pan and how big or how small those potatoes were cut when they went into the pan. Potatoes cooked in the skins will take longer, always, but can take nearly an hour depending on their size. So for this test, I bought two Bakers, and together they were a pound and a half. So they were 12 ounces apiece. That's a good-sized potato. They took nearly, those two, an hour to boil to the point where they were ready to be pureed. The packet was done in 5 minutes. In either case, peeled chunks or whole boiled potatoes, we're going to work into the pan we boiled them in. Here's why. That tomato puree has water inside. The peeled chunks has more water, but even the potato in the skin has water. How much is never known by the cook, but to get the most out of that starch, we need to get that water out. Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants Danny Boy, how do we do that? We keep the puree in the pan because we're going to put that pan back on the stove on low heat and stir the puree just a little bit back and forth with the wooden spoon, and the heat is going to release the water into the form of steam. The potato puree will start to come together. It will look like mashed potatoes. It might even stick to the bottom of the pan a little bit. That's okay. The key here is low heat. Now, Escoffier has a recipe in his book, and he writes to dry the peeled and, yes, peeled and cut chunks in the oven for a few minutes to remove the water. I'm going to come back to that part. When the potatoes are dryish, add the hot stuff. But what hot stuff? You didn't say anything about hot stuff. Right. Mashes from scratch is a few steps at the same time. While the potatoes are boiling, and we have time here, measure your milk, or half and half, or cream, and butter, and put that on the stove to get warm. We want it warm enough to melt the butter. Boiling isn't necessary and, frankly, is probably best avoided. Dairy does boil over, and it makes a spectacular mess, and it also ends up in with less of the product in the pan, so your potatoes won't be as nice as they could be. So let's go back to your pan of dried potatoes. On the low heat burner, add about a quarter of the hot liquid and stir very slowly. This is a lesson in physics and displacement, best left only to textbooks. Dense potato mass meets hot liquid means rapid displacement with aggressive acceleration. Sounds sciencey, doesn't it? If you stir too quickly, the bulky mashed potatoes are going to splash that hot stuff out. And really, the first thing is it might burn you, and we want to avoid that. After your first addition is incorporated, add half of the remaining hot stuff, incorporate carefully, then add the last, taking care also to add that into carefully. Once all the hot stuff is in the potato puree, then you can stir with a little bit of vigor. And check the seasoning. It's going to want salt. It's going to want more salt than you think it will. Potatoes, starchy potatoes, love salt. And don't forget the fresh ground black pepper. So once that's done, you've got mashed potatoes. Share them or don't, I don't care, but you're done. Fresh mashers should be served almost immediately. For my taste test, and my kids were the eager volunteer victims to taste mashed potatoes, yeah, rough work, huh? I made the highest possible luxury mashers I know how to make. Now, that was against the packet. It's like racing a Pinto against a Ferrari. My mom used to make packet mashed potatoes, and that was a long time ago, and that's what she knew how to do. Here's what I noticed, and here's what they said. My observation is the packet potatoes' ratio of fat and liquid were off. Now, I'm sure they're fine for the packet, but compared to what I made, the finished product was too thick. Now, there is a preference, of course, but there's a funny taste change that seems to happen in nearly any dehydrated product. It tastes like potatoes, but it was missing that earthiness I expect from a real potato. This pack of stuff tasted a bit like cardboard. Wasn't horrible, but I'm not really feeling invited for the next bite. So I goosed it after the taste test and I made it slightly better. For the Mac Daddy version, I used the recipe from famed and sadly passed on 3-star Michelin chef Joel Robuchon. His is the version we approximated at the restaurant in Tallahassee. So those two bakers weighed 1 pound, 8 ounces. For that, I heated 5 ounces of half and half, his recipe does read for whole milk, and 6 ounces of butter. For you playing at home, that's a stick and a half. After the whole potatoes were cooked, I peeled and food milled them, dried them, added the hot stuff, and seasoned. Potatoes with that much milk and butter do not hold the shape, which was very different from the packet mashers, which hardly moved. Both girls liked the homemade over the packet, duh. They noticed a flavor and texture difference, even if they couldn't really articulate what those things were. And by the way, it was blind test. They didn't know which was which. Now, let's talk a little bit about the economics and conservation of time and resources. The packet, which was on sale when I bought it, was 79 cents for 1 4-ounce of powdered packet. Those two russets, pound and a half, cost me $1.91. Both versions got butter, but the homemade got substantially more. The packet used 3/4 ounce of butter and the homemade used 6 ounces. Both used dairy. The packet had 1/2 cup of milk, and the homemade had 5 ounces. Now, I told you I chose half and half over milk. The packet also used 1 cup of water as the main agent of reconstitution, and both got salt. Now, plainly, the homemade costs more because there's more butter, except to make the packet taste at all, I added more butter, some extra virgin olive oil, and grated cheddar cheese. That extra probably didn't equal the cost for the homemade, but here's one more thing. The yield from the homemade was more even after feeding it to 2 kids and doing our taste test. I had more left over from the packet, which I ate after I tweaked it, but the end result was I still had more leftover homemade mashers than leftover packet mashers. I used less liquid for the homemade version than I did for the packet version. I used 5 ounces, five ounces of milk and 12 ounces of liquid in the packet. But out of that, I got more of the homemade. So that might be some relevance in thinking about household costs. In this house, I always have milk, half and half, and butter. Buttermilk too, and usually heavy cream. These are staples here. Most people probably have milk and butter. Time and planning are the two main considerations between the packet and homemade. What if you want homemade but not quite as rich as those? The Joy of Cooking, a very reliable resource, writes this for 2 pounds of Baker's. Heat 3 ounces of milk, or half and half, and 1.5 ounces of butter. That turns out, in comparison, to half the milk and 1/4 the amount of butter. For a little bit more potato. So you're definitely going to get a stand-up potato. Now, your preferences and those who remember what Granny did may alter what's possible or mandatory. Some folks add sour cream. Maybe cream cheese. Or cheddar cheese. Or blue cheese. Some add, as I did, extra virgin olive oil. Some add roasted garlic cloves. If you are a peel and quarter person, add whole cloves of garlic to the water. Cut off the woody ends of garlic, please. They don't cook out. And leave the garlic in as you mash and dry your potatoes. It really is fantastic. I worked at a place that would slowly cook leeks, the whites, and just barely getting into the green parts, very slowly in butter and extra virgin olive oil to add in to the finished mashers. It was a spectacular addition. The leeks turn very, very soft. They have a very nice sweetness, almost lose all of their texture. It's not really a crunch. It's just kind of a, well, they're there, but they don't do much. But I mean, as far as crunch, but boy, what a flavor. Bacon bits or well-cooked sliced mushrooms or mushroom duxelles is a good addition. The Joy of Cooking suggests adding saffron, which would be very pretty and tasty, and maybe a bit spendy. If you choose that, I suggest adding saffron to the milk/cream and butter combination, since saffron color comes out better in fat than it does in water. So that's partly a flavor thing and partly a color thing. If you're going to spend saffron money, you may as well get the most out of it, right? The add-in possibilities are as endless as your imagination and compatibility or contrast wants. Basil pesto, not a redundancy since pesto means paste, is a really good addition if it's compatible with the thing you're serving. Oregano or marjoram or arugula pesto would be nice additions. If you like walnut pesto, add them in. I want to revisit the Escoffier procedure. If you've been listening to the Escoffier series, you know he doesn't do things the same as most folks. His procedure for mashers is pretty simple. He writes, quote, peel some Dutch potatoes, cut them into quarters, and cook them quickly in boiling salted water. When cooked, drain and dry them in the oven for a few minutes, then pass them quickly through a sieve. Replace in a pan and vigorously mix in 200 grams, 7 ounces of butter, for every 2¼ pounds, 1 kilo of potato puree. Add approximately 9 fluid ounces of boiling milk a little at a time to reach the right consistency. Season and reheat, but do not allow to overheat, end quote. A sieve, he writes. Well, that could be a ricer, but Robuchon took that to another level, and I have no reason to doubt Escoffier wouldn't have done this. Robuchon passes the peeled, cooked in their skins potatoes through a tammy. A what? It looks like a bamboo steamer, but instead of a bamboo bottom, it has a fine mesh screen, finer than the screen on your front door. It's a bit of work to do, and those tools are not everywhere, and it is because it's a specialized kitchen device, and most home people would not have a reason to spend money on this thing to use it every Thanksgiving. But what it does for mashed potatoes is it raises the bar. Oh, those places with Tammies only are equaled by other places with Tammies in making mashed potatoes. Most recipes offer a range of milk for mashers. Why? Because no one recipe writer can know how much water remains in the potatoes even after you dry them out. And no recipe writer is going to know what is your preference for that finished product. One thing about that just cooked starch is it has a lot of power to absorb, but it can really only absorb one thing at a time. So, taking the excess water away in the form of getting it out in steam leaves room in that starch for the good stuff. Scoffier did make a note that potatoes for mashers should be just cooked as opposed to cooked to very soft and then overcooked. We want that starch to absorb as much of that hot stuff as we can give it. Mashers that sit for half an hour or more, even in a warm place, will start to seize up. That's what they do. It's the starch doing what starch does. It acts in predictable ways, and we know it's going to absorb all the liquid it gives it. We give it. When that happens, it's fine. You didn't do anything wrong. If you want to fix it, put it back in a pot on low heat, add a little bit of milk or half and half, and like on low heat, 1-2 if you have one of those stupid digital stoves, and then just get the heat back in this low. Don't overcook it, because then the flavor changes. Several things happen. It starts to get loose because the starch gives up some of its liquid, so it loses its cohesiveness, and the heat gets high enough that it starts to, instead of just adding heat to the potato and starch, it starts to actually cook that product. And then the flavor is drastically different, and it tastes kind of like that packet stuff. And there's no fixing that. Overcooked is one-way street. So I did mention, I make mashers in the same pan I use to boil them, and sometimes, if speed is important here, I'll peel and cut the potatoes. Here's a tip. Save the water for soups. Don't dump it down the drain. That starch has flavor, and there's no need to waste flavor. Mashers can be made in a mixer, slow speed please, not a blender, and never, ever, ever in a food processor. Now, potato starch isn't gluten. Gluten's a protein. But I mentioned that starches react in very predictable ways, and at fast speeds, potato starch turns to glue, and that also is one-way street. It cannot be undone. And there, I don't know if there's enough butter to fix that problem. Part of the problem is when potatoes turn gluey, when the starch is overworked, it also impacts, one, the texture is just, it isn't pleasant. It's not like spitting out bad. Well, it can be, but there's a flavor change too. There's the texture of its smoothness is gone, and it tastes off. That's not helpful except to say avoid doing that so your potatoes don't taste off. Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
In those rare moments where you have leftover mashed potatoes, they are excellent. The next day, heated slowly in a pot on the stove with a touch of milk, just like you would do if they sat on Thanksgiving dinner too long and you wanted to make them hot again. Heat them, but don't overheat them. Those leftover potatoes also make a superb thickener for soups. And they can be added to breads for a mashed potato bread. I used to make a mashed potato bread at the very same restaurant where we made these potatoes. And it's even well-baked, there's so much fat in there that you can get a really gorgeous brown crust, but it stays soft. It doesn't get crusty, and the crumb inside is magnificent. Oh, the sandwiches you can make with that. Oh, yeah, it might be worth making extra mashers just to make the bread. Or you can make potato rolls for Thanksgiving if you make mashed potatoes 3 days before. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. Or if you are feeling particularly curious, you can make a croquette. Now, that's basically a seasoned and flavored ball or a little log, which is not a flattering phrase to say, then breaded and fried. In this case, fried mashed potatoes with stuff inside. It could be pieces of cheese, cheddar cheese. It could be chives and fresh thyme. It could be truffles. Very much worth trying. Very much worth eating. So, the basic recipe ratios, the one we use at the restaurant in Tallahassee, is for every pound of potatoes, heat to melt, 4 ounces of butter, that's one stick, in half a cup of milk. Salt the water for the boiling, of course, even with the skins on, and season well afterward. That is intended for cooked whole in their skinned potatoes. Now, we pass the potatoes through a food mill, but even peeled, after cooking, you can use Granny's Smasher. Just remember to dry them out in the pot on low heat on the stove to make room in the starch for all that extra good hot stuff. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I will put a link to the previous potato episode for your listening curiosity on today's show notes page, which is culinarylibertarian.com/212. Because this isn't a guest episode, there isn't a chef's table portion, but that doesn't mean you can't listen to the previous ones. And the way you do that is go to culinarylibertarian.com/support and join the Patreon. And I want to thank my Patreon supporters for their continued support and feedback for them from the show, for the show, something like that. I look forward to seeing you in there. And that's today. So go make mashed potatoes. Share this episode on your social media feeds for everybody who cooks for Thanksgiving dinner or somebody who needs some quiet encouragement for better Thanksgiving mashers, but we won't tell anybody. This is just generosity. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Eating Liberty podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.